May it please the Court, Ronald G. Poliquin on behalf of the appellant, James Wilkerson. This case comes to the Court after a jury trial in which Mr. Wilkerson was acquitted of the lead charge of murder by abuse and neglect, but was convicted for the lesser charge of assault in the second degree. Both charges stem from the identical set of facts. This case addresses the important rights of a defendant to impeach a state's witness, to rebut the state's evidence, and also a defendant's right to present evidence. Here, the lower court barred the defense from presenting any independent evidence that the appellant's co-defendant and victim's mother, Laura Frank, struck the child 8 to 10 times in a violent manner. Specifically, this occurred when a state employee witnessed the incident, which occurred on October 17, 2005, at the James Williams State Building. The employee subsequently called the Division of Family Services concerning the incident, was interviewed by the police. Her phone call to the Division of Family Services was recorded and preserved.
Well, just so we're clear on the argument, let's parse what you've said in your opening. You said there are three things at issue: the defendant's right to present evidence generally, to impeach the credibility of the witness, and then now you're focusing on a specific incident, although you've referred to 8 or 10 times. So let's focus on all three so we're clear on what your legal argument is.
Yes, Your Honor.
As I understand it, with regard to the specific October 17th incident, the Superior Court's ruling was, based on the medical examiner's testimony, that was too remote in time, so it wasn't coming in because of remoteness. Then your alternative argument was, we'd like it to come in for impeachment because the mother said she never hit the child. And the Superior Court's argument was, it's already come in through other witnesses, so you've effectively impeached her testimony with others. So let's start with just those two as it relates to October 17th. What was the legal error?
Concerning the legal error, it was being brought in both under Rule 404B, under a Getz standard, and also under Rule 608B, referring to the rebuttal of the witness. Concerning the court's decision, I believe, Your Honor, it's mistaken to say that the court addressed the rebuttal argument. They did not. They simply addressed the Getz argument. I believe they addressed that inappropriately.
What are you calling the rebuttal argument?
The fact that the defendant has a right to rebut the state's witness, in this case Mrs. Frank's testimony, that she never hurt or hit the child.
All right. Well, with regard to the Getz analysis, it's a prior bad act. But it's not the act of the defendant. It's the act of a witness. Did you want the October 17th incident into evidence to show that that was the cause of death, or did you want it to demonstrate that the witness was lying when she said she never struck the child?
Your Honor, I think it was under a 404B analysis that it was not being shown that that incident caused the child's death. There was no proffer by the defense that the incident was being introduced for that purpose. It was being introduced to show other exceptions to Rule 404 evidence against character concerning identity of who caused the injuries, similar occurrence, and that was the fact that what happened at the incident was that a witness had saw.
Now, I know what happened at the incident, but what I want to know is why you wanted it, the purpose that you wanted it into evidence, and why you think the court excluded it.
One is to rebut the co-defendant and turn state witness testimony that she had never hurt or hit the child. That's under, I believe, a 608B analysis, which was never discussed in the court's decisions, although it is mentioned very briefly at the very end of the court's decision concerning that the court really does not conduct any kind of 608B analysis as to whether or not that incident should come under come in under 608B.
So how do you characterize the court's ruling, and why was it legally erroneous?
It was legally erroneous because the court simply took the position that, one, since the incident did not cause the child's death, that it could not come in. That was essentially the basis of the court's ruling. What the court stated that, one, that it was too remote, that it took place more than 1 month before the injury occurred to the victim that would have caused the death. However, under 608B analysis, as stated concerning remoteness, this happened a little more than a month and a half prior to the incident.
All right, well, that's where you've confused me. And because I thought you just said moments ago you didn't want to introduce it to show that it was the cause of death.
No, I'll try to make myself clear, Your Honor. I'm not trying to show that it was the cause of death. However, remoteness is one of the factors under the 608B analysis that the court should consider when presenting it to as evidence of impeachment against the state's witness.
All right, so just so you and I stay focused, you never wanted it introduced to show that it was the cause of death. You only wanted it introduced for impeachment purposes. And apparently, the Superior Court misunderstood your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. We also wanted to introduce it for the purpose of identity of who actually struck the victim. We also had a habit argument concerning how the child was disciplined, and concerning the identity of how of. Excuse me, Your Honor, if I could have a moment.
Well, while you're looking, so your argument is the mother beat the child all the time. October 17th is an example. And if she was doing this all the time, using October 17th as an example, she could just as easily have been the one that caused the death as the defendant, even though we don't have any indication that she actually struck the child within the few days of the death.
Correct, Your Honor, although there was other testimony at trial which stated that the mother did strike the child during that period of time when the injury could have occurred that caused the child's death. But that is correct, Your Honor. Those are the basis for the two reasons that we wanted the incident to be submitted to the jury. One, for rebuttal, and other, two, because this is the typical way the mother disciplined the child.
But there was other evidence, wasn't there, before the jury that the mother hit the child more than once?
Correct, Your Honor. There was other evidence.
In which case, why doesn't the court get to decide how much of that type of evidence is necessary once the jury has heard that the mother hits the child? What more is accomplished by your getting in the evidence that you would prefer that says on this particular date there was a witness who saw the mother hit the child?
Simply the fact that more than one person had witnessed Laura Frank, the mother, strike the child on different occasions does not in itself, is our belief, that make it culminative. This isn't the case where we have five witnesses come about and testify as to the same incident and all recite the same set of facts.
Well, did anybody dispute the fact that the mother had hit the child in the past?
Yes. The mother testified that she had never struck or hit the child. And that was a testimony that was solicited by the state. Essentially,
So if I understand you, you're saying that the fact that there was evidence that the mother did, in fact, hit the child doesn't solve your concern, because you want to have stronger evidence that the mother was hitting the child so that there could be no doubt about that.
Yes, Your Honor, and considering this concern about culminative evidence is that there was an orchestrated effort on the state's part to discredit the witness that had stated previously that the mother struck the child on numerous occasions. Certainly, the defense should have a right to present further testimony by an independent witness. In this case, this witness is not friends with the defendant. This witness is not friends with the co-defendant, the mother. This is someone that's an employee, a disinterested party, who would offer further testimony that Ms. Frank struck the child. And this would have certainly bolstered the claim of the other witness, along with furthering the defense's theory of the case that Laura Frank's testimony that she had nothing to do with the victim's injuries untrustworthy. And the fact that she was not telling the truth when she testified under oath that she never hurt the child or disciplined the child in a way where she hit him. I don't believe the court, although they referenced 608B, they simply do not apply the standards concerning 608B, which have been set out by this court. One is whether the testimony of the witness being impeached is crucial. Certainly here, I don't know how there can be an argument that Laura Frank, the co-defendant, the only person that the state had proffered previously with the same charges, it was not crucial testimony. The fact that she had entered into a plea agreement with the state. In addition, she was the only other individual accused of causing these injuries to the child. The defense's theory of the case was that she, in fact, caused those injuries to the child. The jury had two options in this case. Either the appellant, James Wilkerson, caused these injuries to the child, or Laura Frank caused these injuries to the child. Certainly, if the defense could demonstrate through independent evidence that Laura Frank lied in her testimony that she had never struck the child by presenting a testimony of an uninterested witness, that could have changed the jury's belief in convicting the defendant of the assault in the second.
What was the original charge against the mother?
The original charge against the mother was murder by abuse by neglect.
And neglect was?
Abuse or neglect, I should say.
But was the allegation that she had actually hit the child herself, or that she had left the child in the care of someone who hit the child?
I believe it was an either or, but I do believe I'm not quite sure, Your Honor, as to what it was. But I know it was the identical charge of Mr. Wilkerson's charge, murder by abuse or neglect.
All right. Well,
we'll
have to sort that out in the record, because my understanding of the record is that at one time she lied on behalf of Mr. Wilkerson, and then she changed her testimony. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And Wilkerson's testimony was that the child fell off a skateboard or got injured that way, although the prison inmates testified. He said he hit the child in the stomach. And it seems to be that the medical examiner said the nature of the injuries were inconsistent with a fall and consistent with being hit intentionally in the stomach.
I'll address those two issues. One, there was actually two other inmates in this case which testified in opposite of those two inmates.
No, I understand that.
And second,
the focus here is
on the
who hit the child. And the injury wasn't by a fall, and my question is, did the state ever contend that the mother actually hit the child or simply left the child in a circumstance where Wilkerson hit the child?
I can only answer as to the state's theory at trial. I don't know if there was ever a time when the state had a theory that the mother abused the child. I do know that there's undisputed medical concerning the testimony of the medical examiner that during the specific time period that the child was left in the care of James Wilkerson, it was probably not the time when the injury that caused his death occurred. In addition, the medical examiner also testified that the bruises, you couldn't, the timing of the bruises could not be, she could not put a specific date on each individual bruise or when they were caused. So the actual testimony of the medical examiner was that during the date where this alleged, where the skateboard accident happened, that was not the date that caused the injuries that caused the death of the child. In addition, concerning 608B, there has to be some logical relevance to the specific impeachment evidence to the question of credibility. Here, Laura Frank stated to the police and also under oath that she never hurt the child and that she did not discipline the child in any violent way. This evidence would have demonstrated Laura Frank's, one, lied about never hurting the child, and in turn may have lied about the cause of the child's injuries and bruises. The evidence also may be relevant as to why Franks struck a deal with the state to testify against Mr. Wilkerson. Frank's testimony that she never hurt the child clearly is not just a statement of innocence that she did not cause the injuries, but also it should be considered a broad disclaimer of misconduct that opens the door to otherwise collateral inadmissible evidence to contradict her statement. Now, the defense does not have the position that is collateral. We believe that is material, whether or not she in fact struck the child or not.
Well, going back to Justice Berger's question, though, why wasn't this cumulative? And to the extent it could have been admitted, it was either in the court's discretion or it was harmless.
It's not harmless, Your Honor, in the sense that if the jury does not believe Mrs. Wilkerson's testimony that she never hurt the child.
You mean Frank, correct?
Excuse me, Laura Frank, thank you. It does not believe Laura Frank's testimony that she did not hurt the child. She's the only other possible person that could have caused these injuries. And the defense's theory is that Laura Frank caused these injuries.
Let me focus for a minute on the materiality of this testimony. As I understand it, there were several eyewitnesses that had observed Frank strike the child over 10 times just 2 months prior to his death. So that evidence establishes the fact that when she said she never struck the child, she was lying. If the evidence shows it was 2 months before his death, how is the impeachment evidence you sought material to any issue in play?
There's no evidence presented at trial that, I'm trying to reference or remember your question, that there was evidence presented that Ms. Frank had struck the child prior to his death?
My understanding is there were several eyewitnesses who said that she did strike Derek over 10 times, but they timed it 2 months before his death, which probably led to the trial judge's thoughts, one, that you've already got the possibility that she's lying in the record from that testimony, and two months before is pretty remote, and there's no evidence that she struck the child within the two-month period in a way that would have resulted in his death. That's the theory, as I understand it.
The only evidence presented at trial that Frank struck the child was from Michelle Hawkins, which was the defendant's girlfriend, and two, Travis Furness, who was a friend of the defendant, Mr. Wilkerson. Therefore, we still don't think it's not culminative in the fact that it simply bolsters the testimony of two witnesses who have a certain bias that the state pointed out during the case. I see I'm running. I might as well run through my rebuttal.
You can save the last 40 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Justice Holland, Justice Berger. May it please the court.
If you wouldn't mind, would you start where we left off and run through what, if any, evidence there was of the fact that Frank beat her child?
Okay. I think it's already been alluded to, but the evidence came, I believe, from at least two sources. There was the testimony of Michelle Hawkins, who was the girlfriend of the defendant, James Wilkerson.
So therefore, arguably, the jury could listen to that and say, oh, yeah, well, she's just trying to make her boyfriend sound better. So what about testimony from somebody who doesn't have a bias?
Well, the other testimony, I think, was from Mr. Travis Furness, and he was actually a prosecution witness who had testified on April 23rd of 2007, just before the court's second ruling on this matter. And at that time, the jury heard testimony from Mr. Furness on actually defense cross-examination, that he saw Frank strike Derek Lowe, Jr., the decedent in this case, on a regular basis. That's at B36.
Right, and what's defendant. His relationship to the defendant?
I think he was just a friend or an acquaintance of the defendant, that he had known Mr. Wilkerson for a time and was familiar, I guess, at least with the living arrangement that Mr. Wilkerson and his girlfriend was occupying at that time.
So then would opposing counsel's contention be correct that there were no witnesses to prior abuse by the mother who were not arguably connected to the defendant and therefore have some reason to want to tell that kind of a story?
Well, I don't think there were any witnesses who actually testified at trial who you would consider to be completely neutral. I mean, Mr. Furness was certainly an acquaintance of Mr. Wilkerson. Mr. Furness also testified on the cross-examination that he had told Detective Spicer, the chief investigating officer, that he had also observed Laura Frank strike Derek in the stomach. That's at B37 of the state.
Did the state take the position at trial that those two witnesses were not credible with regard to those incidents?
No, I don't think they did. I think, you know, the state presented the evidence as it came in.
So it never made an argument to the jury that those two witnesses' contention that the mother had struck the child should be disbelieved?
I don't recall if that argument was or was not made in the closing argument. Mr. Furness testified, I think, the day before the state concluded its case, but I don't recall whether or not there was an attempt by the state to sort of impeach its own witness in closing argument. I'm sorry, I just can't answer that. I don't want to say one way or the other. They may have, I don't know, or state may have.
Well, that would be somewhat relevant to the issue we're talking about, because it's the defense position that they had a neutral witness that had no connection to the defendant who would corroborate, you know, what these two witnesses of interest were saying.
Well, I think that's true, and it gets back to a couple of questions. One is cumulative. It's certainly additional evidence, but more importantly, I think, as the Chief Justice has noted, that, well, how is it all material and probative, which is the real key on relevance? If she had struck the child, all right, she did strike the child. Maybe she was being less than candid when she said, I never hurt the child, although I guess that's more of a subjective determination by her as opposed to I never touched my child.
Well, as I understand the record, the medical examiner said the injury could have occurred in a several-day window of time.
Yes,
is that right?
That's correct.
So it not wasn't necessarily when the defendant was babysitting, so to speak. We have a several-day window. And the medical examiner testified the child was probably punched in the stomach. And since most people don't do things like that to children in the presence of others, the defense argues they would like to show through a neutral witness that the mother had hit the child in the stomach in the past, and then raised the possibility with the jury that the mother had done it again.
Well, I think that was certainly where the defense was going, and what the judge determined was that, well, the only expert medical testimony in the case was that the child died of a blunt force injury to the abdomen, and this caused a perforation of small intestine. Dr. Tobin could not pinpoint as to exactly when the blunt force injury occurred. her best guess was within a few days of the December 3 death. She did say that when you have this condition, the perforation of the small intestine, and it starts leaking into the gastrointestinal cavity, I guess it was, this is when the acute peritonitis results. And she says the first 24 hours, you may not really see any symptoms, but after that, you get very sick.
But the question that the defense raises is, if the mother is testifying, I've never disciplined my child in that manner, and you have an objective witness, well, the witness who is excluded, who for our purposes we'll assume was a neutral person, that could say, I saw the mother hit the child in the abdomen. Why isn't that something the jury should have known?
Well, I think if it had been more explicit like that, that might have been more arguable. It'd certainly be a more compelling argument. But what the trial judge pointed out was that was not the testimony. The testimony, I think, was from a DFS worker who would certainly be neutral, was that she saw the mother on October 17th, about 6 weeks before the death, strike the child repeatedly, but she did not testify that there was any striking of the stomach or punching of the stomach, that she didn't see the child being punched. I think it was a situation more of the child being slapped repeatedly or spanked. And that was the sum total of this October 17 evidence, which is really the only evidence that got excluded here. The trial judge and the pretrial.
So, well, and the defense is contending this mother says she doesn't do anything that wouldn't be otherwise acceptable to discipline her child. And then you have a DFS worker that, according to you, will testify, well, I saw the mother slapping and disciplining the child in a very aggressive way, for want of a better term. But I can't say when I witnessed it, she ever hit the child in the abdomen. The fact that she's disciplining the child in an aggressive way, but not in the abdomen, is a basis for excluding it?
Well, I think so, because it gets to the point of materiality and probativeness and ultimately relevance, that the child died from a blunt force injury to the stomach, not because the child had been spanked or slapped in the face or anything else. That, and Dr. Tobin said that the facial injuries, that she didn't think those were related to falling off the skateboard, which had been Mr. Wilkerson's story. So I think that was really the focus, is what caused the death of the child. That was the allegation, that this conduct, whatever it was abuse that had resulted, or neglect, but I think it was really
then
abuse.
I misunderstood the defense's argument. I understood what caused the child's death was an issue, but I thought there was also a question of who. And the defense was trying to say, this mother has a history of aggressive discipline. And if you're looking at who, it's just as likely the mother hit the child in the abdomen as anyone else because of this history of aggressive discipline. So when you're looking for the source of the injury, the mother is the person to look to.
Well, I think that was the inference that they would certainly be inviting the jury to draw, but it's speculation here that it's kind of like what happened in the Hicks case that this court recently decided, where they wanted to point the finger at a prosecution witness named Davis and say, well, he's had this history in the past of possessing drugs, so we don't know exactly whose drugs they were in Ricky Hicks's prosecution, but it could certainly have been this other fellow, Mr. Davis, because, look, he has this prior conviction. And I think the court rightly concluded that, no, that's just one step too far removed, that you're going to need a little more direct causal connection here to tie it up. Otherwise, you're just allowing the jury to speculate, and
well,
that was the problem.
Well, isn't this a different kind of situation? Is there any thought that anyone other than the defendant or the mother caused this child's death? I mean, nobody has ever suggested, and nothing was presented at trial to suggest, that it's anything other than one of those two people, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so we've got a situation where there are two potential murderers, and the jury is being asked, which one is it? And the state is saying, we know who it is. It's the defendant here. And the defendant says, wait a second. This lethal injury could have just as easily been inflicted by the mother. It's not as if it was done in a way that only a man had the strength to do it. So that was not an issue. So the only issue was who did it. And the mother certainly had opportunity in terms of being alone with the child, perhaps more than the defendant during the relevant time period. So now it's down to, okay, who do we believe actually punched this child in the stomach? And at that point, doesn't it become very important to the jury's analysis whether there's any dispute about the fact that the mother had a history of smacking the kid, whether it was in the stomach or, you know, appropriate or inappropriate discipline or whatever, forget that, but hearing that people had seen the mother inflicting corporal punishment on this child.
Well, as I say, I think it's certainly cumulative evidence. The only distinction is whether it's from disinterested parties or not. But ultimately, what it came down to, there were three adults who were living in the house, and there's been no suggestion that Mr. Wilkerson's girlfriend, Hawkins, had anything to do with it. So it was really these two people. But the other evidence in the case, I think, is what's important, and certainly by the time the judge made his second ruling, he had heard virtually all of that. I think there were only two prosecution witnesses left. And the other evidence was that on November 29, when Hawkins and Laura Frank went shopping that day, the child, Derek Lowe, was left in the care of James Wilkerson. When the two adults returned approximately 2 hours later, there were noticeable bruises on the child's face. Mr. Wilkerson's explanation was that the child had fallen off his skateboard a couple of times, and that was the source of the bruising. So I think that was the scenario or the situation that the jury had. There's no eyewitness testimony in this case.
But that doesn't that highlight the focus of our questions? The state was making out a circumstantial case against Wilkerson, and Wilkerson's defense was, there's a better circumstantial case against the mother.
Well, I don't know if it's a better. Maybe there's another.
No, that's the defense. But
certainly.
If we're making analogy to cases, it's a little bit like Charbonneau, to the extent the state decided the defendant was the perpetrator and made an arrangement with the mother, and the defense is, well, it was not me, it was someone else. But the state has committed itself to a certain course of conduct, and then consistent with its decision on who was the most culpable, objects to the defense presenting evidence of the defense's version of what's the stronger circumstantial case.
Well, and I think the reason, though, is because of the remoteness in time, and there just isn't a causal connection between whatever happened on October 17 and the child's death on December 3rd. It's just too remote. It's cumulative evidence.
Mr. Williams, on both the issue of remoteness and on the issue, if there is one, about the nature of the blow, whether it was to the stomach or whether it was slapping around, the blows allegedly struck by Frank, Allen versus State seems to set the benchmark for measuring remoteness at 10 years and then leaving, depending on the circumstances of the case, lesser periods of time, basically within the province of the jury to decide whether it was too remote in their minds to be relevant. And secondly, on the issue of what kind of blows were struck by whom, possibly, wasn't there in relation to the October 17th incident a call placed to DFS abuse hotline describing in detail Frank's abuse of the child?
Yes, I think in answer to the second part, yes.
Did the jury hear any of that?
No, the jury did not hear that. That was the evidence that the defense wanted to present, and that was the subject of both the trial judge's pretrial ruling on the state's motion in limine and the subsequent ruling.
Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but at the bottom line, why isn't it within the province of the jury to sort this out? Why is the jury barred from hearing this evidence?
Well, because in this case, we're not talking about any possible striking of the child. We're talking about what was the fatal injury to the child, and that is the subject of the only expert medical testimony that was given. The defense did not present any contrary testimony.
What? And I keep coming back to the question, who? We know that the injury commenced with someone striking the child in the abdomen. And the state makes a circumstantial case that it was the defendant. And the defendant wants to, by way of defense, say it could have been the mother. And in fact, the mother has a history of striking the child.
Yes, but I don't think could have been is enough. They needed something else to have a causal connection here, and they didn't. What the state had was that the child was left in Mr. Wilkerson's care, apparently didn't have these facial bruises at the time, but when the two other adults in the household returned, there were observable bruises to the child.
One thing that's fascinating to me about this case is, would we even be here with this argument if the mother hadn't denied striking the child at all? And the issue becomes, can't she be impeached for that? If there were no issue raised by her by denying any abuse at all, would we even be here?
Well, probably not. I think, but she was impeached by testimony of at least two witnesses at trial. And Mr. Furness, although he was an acquaintance of Mr. Wilkerson, he testified very favorably to the defense.
Yeah, but the defense point, and maybe we're rehashing something we've heard enough of, but the defense point is, but we had an even better witness. We had a state employee whose job it is to investigate and analyze instances of abuse who would have testified, who had no ties to the defendant. And the trial judge kept our best evidence to impeach her out of the record, kept it from the jury. And particularly in scope of impeachment evidence, aren't we pretty liberal in what comes in and what doesn't?
Well, I think we are pretty liberal, but at the same time, the judge has discretion, and I don't think the judge abused his discretion here to decide when things are simply too remote, that certainly it's a 10-year period for prior felony convictions. But this, because of the nature of the expert medical testimony, was much more pinpointed. It was within a few days of the child's death on December 3rd. And even though it was certainly a disinterested witness on October 17, the trial judge did not abuse its discretion in finding, well, that's just too remote. There was other evidence, so it would have been cumulative. Ultimately, since Laura Frank actually had some very helpful things to say on behalf of the defendant when she testified, that any error or any possible error is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt in this case. If there's any additional questions, I'll certainly try to answer those.
Thank you very much. Seconds, the clock says.
In response, Furness and Michelle Hawkins were impeached, and impeached, I believe, in both, at least in by the state in the case. I don't know if they were impeached in the closing, but I suspect they were.
The next time you have an argument, it would really be good to know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying
it would be helpful to the court, because to the extent you're saying I have a neutral witness, it would be good for the court to know exactly what happened in the record.
Well, I know that Furness and Hawkins were impeached by the state. Secondly, I believe the trial court erred, if I may continue.
I understand that. But do you understand my point, that it would be good for you to know what the state actually argued after it impeached them and be able to communicate to that to the court when we're trying to decide your case?
I understand, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.
Rise.